Shakespeare Festival. I'm Becky.
I'm Dawn.
And I'm Hannah. Today we are welcoming Catherine Mayberry of Pigeon Creek Shakespeare Company. She is directing our production of Merry Wives of Windsor this summer, and she was also the director of our 2022 production of Comedy of Errors. We will be discussing regional Shakespeare and all of its quirks, but before we bring her on, gals, how the heck are ya? This is the first day I've seen you since I got home.
Yeah, Hannah, I feel like I have lived seven lives in the week
since I left.
Seen you last.
Really? Why? What has happened?
Nothing that I want to get into it on this podcast.
Really?
Yeah, Dawn knows about it, but
oh my gosh, I can't wait.
It's all silly, silly things.
I've also lived a lot of lives.
Gossip.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Yes, Dawn.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, since last time we've recorded, I did my one-woman show, Big Tumor Young Woman, at ArtX with the Flagstaff Foundry. We performed at the Cancer Support Community here in Northern Arizona. And I'm really proud that I did it. I've put it down and I haven't looked at it since. I don't know if I want to keep doing it or just let it be. But
okay.
But I at least feel very proud for just getting it out of my head and
gotcha.
Onto paper.
So not quite sure you want to keep developing it yet?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm undecided.
Considering. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Godspeed on that decision. You know, the decision might be made for you because someone might be like, hey.
Yeah.
And then you might have to be like, oh, okay, well, in that case.
Yeah. Well, that has already kind of happened
a
little bit. There's something else here in town that's happening at the beginning of fall. But,
but
yeah, I'm just
going to see how
no
it feels.
Decisions have been made yet.
Gotcha. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, what else?
I mean, I feel like, Hannah, you have a very exciting thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess I can check in. Yeah, since we chatted last, I did, in fact, get married.
Woo-hoo.
And got back from my honeymoon literally like yesterday. Yeah, I mean, guys, wow, it was a whirlwind. I mean, I've been out of the office for only like 2 weeks, maybe not even technically two full weeks, but it feels like I've lived a lifetime. I logged off a couple days before the wedding and just got back from my honeymoon. And wow, I feel like I've said it on the pod, but like weddings are so much work. They're so busy. It was honestly like one of the best, most exciting, coolest experiences of my life, and also one of the hardest. It's so much time, money, expectations, and I'm certain much of that is what I put on my own self, not necessarily what other people are putting onto me, but it's just a very incredible time, but a very difficult and emotional time. And do not get me wrong, none of that is because of my husband. Like, I wanted to marry my husband very much. It's just the actual production elements of the wedding that are difficult. It was not at all whether deciding I wanted to marry my husband. He's the best. And that is the best decision I ever made. But yeah, wow. If you are an arts administrator getting married, I feel like you guys understand. Like, maybe it's just because my brain, you know, is so detail oriented. It was really hard for me to not just like hyper fixate on it. And so it was a very busy few months. It was very hard for me not to focus on the wedding when I had, you know, so many other things I also had to do, work and life. So it was so much fun. I enjoyed it. It was an amazing day. It was gorgeous. It turned out beautiful. My bridesmaids and my day of coordinator and my mom, and we just, everyone pulled together. It turned out so beautifully. And honestly, guys, wow, the photos are insane. I already got a couple from Chandler. He just sent like a couple of previews and they're insanely gorgeous. A plug to the hired actors that were the entire group of deer behind our ceremony. We had like 12 deer just like prancing through the meadow at sunset, and we were like, we literally could not have planned this. And they were there like all through our portraits. So I'm excited for like all of the wedding portraits with just like a bunch of deer and also a sunset and also the San Francisco peaks. Like,
beautiful.
Like, literally insane. It's kind of crazy. crazy. Yeah, so it was just a whirlwind. Like, I can't even begin to describe the experience of getting married. It's just like, the whole time I was like, this isn't happening, but it is. I'm outside of my body, but not. I'm looking at it, but it's happening to me. Like, it was a really weird experience. I feel like it's kind of like how you've described this. It's nothing like pregnancy, but I'm going to try to connect it where you're like looking at your baby and you're like, is that me or is that my baby? Also, I had that baby.
That was inside
you? Yeah.
What?
And I'm like, I'm getting married. Who am I? Where am I? What am I? It was just like a really crazy experience.
You literally said that. Like, yeah. We were in the holding room or whatever. That's not the term.
Holding chamber.
The holding chambers before like getting ready to start the ceremony. And Hannah, you were just like, who am I and where am I? Like, somebody get me some water.
I was like, am I about to get married? I have no idea what's happening. Yeah, it was just like a really crazy experience, but so much fun. The live band was so much fun. Our food was amazing. Everyone looked beautiful. So I was so happy with how the bridesmaids' green dresses looked. Yeah. Especially I got like a preview of the photos from Chandler. I was like, everyone looks gorgeous. I was really happy with just all how the little details turned out. So yeah, just shout out to everyone that helped make it happen, and shout out to everyone that just like kept me afloat, because sometimes I was just like so exhausted that I was like, I don't even know what's happening. So it happened and it was beautiful and so much fun. And Puerto Rico was awesome. It was definitely exhausting as well. Lots of travel. You know, we hiked, we went to the rainforest, lots of swimming. We also just did lots of lounging around by the pool. So it was a good combo of all those things. We had a really good time. But honestly, I'm really happy to be home. Yesterday was our first day of real marriage. Like, yesterday I worked. Like, I sat at my, you know, I sat at my desk and I actually worked. And I went to Ariel and taught an Ariel class. And we made dinner and, like, you know, did laundry. And I was like, this is actually what marriage is like. Like, you know, Jacob goes and does his own thing. I feel like I'm excited to actually, because I am a creature of habit and I love my routine. I love, you know, being in my home, keeping things clean and getting my ducks in a row. So I'm excited. That was a really awesome time, the wedding and the honeymoon and all that stuff, having family here. But I'm really excited to just like be married and kind of just start to live our lives actually alongside each other. And just so much happened in the last few weeks that I'm just like, what is there not to say? There's so much to say. Anyway, so lovely. But thank you both for being my bridesmaids and being beside me through it all. Kind of crazy.
Absolutely.
It was really awesome to be there, and I loved it. And it was so funny because so I have a story to tell from your wedding, but it's both connected because your little niece, Birdie, was in the wagon with Willa, and Blake was beside the wagon. Mm-hmm. And I heard Blake tell Levi, tell Eli that he wanted Birdie to lay an egg. I thought it was hilarious. And I guess after that, Blake told Sean that he wanted Birdie to have wings.
Aww.
So when we kept telling him that he was going to be in the wedding with a little girl named Birdie, he was fully anticipating a bird.
Aww. He was like, no. I thought that one of the flower girls was a bird.
Yeah, he was like, but I want her to have wings and lay an egg.
Aww, he did not get it. That's so cute.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know what my check-in is. I went to your wedding. I'm mothering two children. That's the big thing. But yeah, I've had some great days. We've had some friends visit and just spending a lot of time with his little like toddler crew. Mm-hmm. I feel so lucky to have so many close friends who are like in the game with me.
Yeah.
So that's really amazing. If you know a mother. And even if you're like not that into kids, go hang out with her. She misses you.
Yeah.
Becky's been awesome lately about hanging with me. Mm-hmm. I felt so like I'm sorry for like some of the things that are going on, like drama wise or whatever, but like it feels so nice to like be someone's friend around something that is not children and right. be like, oh, people still like value me. Yeah. And I've gotten back to aerial conditioning. I'm teaching aerial conditioning again on Wednesday nights. And that has been huge boost for me. Willa's still not taking a bottle. I think, I don't know if I talked about this last time on the podcast or not. Feeding specialist says she never will. So we're just moving forward, but she loves solids. She ate a whole egg yolk this morning. She's just like, feed me, feed me. So that's good.
Good. Okay. Well, hopefully the end is outside
of that, I don't know. I'm with you, Hannah. I think marriage is pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. I've been really appreciating my husband lately, which is good since we're deep in it.
Deep in it. Jacob bought Sean a Puerto Rican cigar, so they got plans.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I guess Jacob texted him and was like, will you, and it was the middle of the night. Well, I guess it was the middle of the night for Puerto Rico. And he was like, will you smoke a Puerto Rican cigar? And I think Sean was just like, yes.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah, I was shameless plug, I'm in the upcoming show that our guest Catherine Mayberry is directing.
Yes.
Merry Wives of Windsor. I play Mistress Quickly. But I was talking to Dawn that I just feel like memorizing feels so different right now. And I mean, I'm attributing it to the medications and the treatments that I've gone through. But I'm just like,
it's not sticking.
Like the synapses are just not like connect. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I feel a little bit better now that I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I just have a different process than before, or I don't know. Maybe it's just more time with the script, but I'm just like, things just feel different.
Yeah.
So.
Dang.
Yeah.
Huh.
All right. Well, thanks for the check-in, Trues. Now here's Catherine to join us in talking about my all-time favorite type of theater, regional theater.
Hi, Catherine.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm so happy to be here in Flagstaff and have a week of rehearsals under our belts for Merry Wives of Windsor. We're having a great time. So, yeah, things are good.
Yay.
Yeah.
And this is your third time?
Second time directing at Flagshakes.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Although you have been to see Flagshakes because you were here all the way back to see Duchess of Malfi, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, that's the first time I came to visit. Yeah.
Okay. That's awesome. So third time here.
Yes.
But second time directing.
Okay. Yeah.
Catherine, will you tell the shrews who you are?
Sure. So again, I'm Catherine Mayberry. I come from Michigan. And what I do in Michigan is I'm the executive director of the Pigeon Creek Shakespeare Company, which is a small regional touring company. And I also work as a freelance theater artist and actor, director, teacher, all of those kinds of things that many of us do with our different hats on. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I primarily am occupied with administrating this small regional theater company.
Yeah. Yay. And did you start it or did you assume the role?
So I was an original cast member when I was an undergrad. I went to an undergrad university that had a Shakespeare Festival attached to it. So Grand Valley State University has the Grand Valley Shakespeare Festival. The first acting that I did was actually Shakespeare in college. And that production, which still exists, the Grand Valley Shakespeare Festival, is a mostly student cast with equity guest artists who come in. And so we had this guest artist who came in several times while I was in school, who had the idea to start an outdoor Shakespeare company in the summers in our same region because he just fell in love with sort of the beautiful outdoors of the Lake Michigan shore. And so he was the one who had the idea to start Pigeon Creek, and I was a founding cast member for those first couple of summers. And eventually I went away to graduate school at the American Shakespeare Center, where several folks involved with Flagshakes also did, decided that what I wanted to do was sort of expand what Pigeon Creek was doing. And so when I finished my graduate degrees, I approached the incarnation of Pigeon Creek's board that existed at that time and, you know, proposed, like, let's expand to year-round programming, let's do some touring. So that was my involvement.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you and Don go to school together at the same time or just attended the same school?
Attended the same school.
Okay, but you guys never overlapped.
No, I think we missed each other by a year.
Gotcha.
Unlike with Eileen.
Right.
I'm not forgetting that we overlapped. We actually did not overlap.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't remember that Eileen and I were at Stanton at the same time, and Eileen was like, we absolutely were.
Yeah, well, and Eileen started with me, and then she took a leave and went back, so she overlapped with a lot more people than I did.
And that may have been why, Dawn. Maybe she came and then left and then came
back. She definitely didn't come in my, like, class.
Right.
And by the time she got there, I was absolutely exhausted. So I'm giving myself a pass.
Not you were just a husk of a human at that point.
I was so tired.
Well, tell us more.
Grad school was amazing, but exhausting.
Yes. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense. Tell us more about Pigeon Creek. So just before we jumped onto this this chat, you were saying, you know, Pigeon Creek seems, and its location feels very similar to Flagshake. So can you tell us a little bit about its demographics, like the size of the town, the size of the company, maybe even your budget size, if you're willing to share that?
Absolutely. So we are a touring company. We're based in Grand Rapids, which is the second largest city in Michigan, but it's smaller than Detroit by quite a bit. So we do our rehearsing and, you know, our administrative work is centered in Grand Rapids, but we travel all over the state and occasionally out of state. But, you know, it's a really interesting market because there is not a ton of paying theater on our side of the state. I mean, Michigan is quite clearly divided between the eastern half of Michigan, which is where Detroit and its metro area are, and the western half, you know, in terms of like all kinds of businesses, but theater. The area where we live has the Lake Michigan shoreline, which means that there's a huge tourist industry. And then we're situated about a 2.5 hour drive from Chicago. We're actually closer to Chicago than we are to Detroit. And we also are in the same region as the Stratford Festival in Canada. So, you know, Stratford is close enough to us that we have some schools, or at least pre-pandemic, we had some schools, like high schools, that would actually take their students on weekend field trips to Stratford. So that, you know, that exists within our sphere. So it's, you know, it's a really interesting market in terms of just like strategic positioning and thinking about who is it that we're serving. Like, you know, we're thinking about going into communities where a lot of people may not have seen any live theater before, like, you know, whether it's Shakespeare or not. But then we also, in some ways, are in competition, particularly with, you know, theaters in Chicago for our pool of actors. I mean, for a long time, it was the prevailing wisdom that if you went to college in Michigan and got a theater degree, you should immediately move to Chicago. And that was the idea. It's like, if you want to get paid for doing theater, that's what you have to do. And we've been trying to counteract that for a while, you know, to create a way for people to at least not lose money on doing shows, right? To have some paid opportunities for artists and some anchoring to keep them in Michigan, and to recognize that there are lots of reasons that artists might want to live in small regional communities, right? The cost of living is so much lower. Mm-hmm. It's actually possible to like
own a house.
You know, like those kinds of things. And there are people who have great opportunities with their day jobs in the Grand Rapids area who might want to stay because of that, or they might have family there and they might want to stay because of that. And so what are some of the opportunities that we can create for artists, which seems to me, when I'm here in Flagstaff, a lot of what is going on with you all as well. You know, you have sort of this mixed pool of both local actors and people who are coming in from outside. And so you're creating opportunities for the local people who approach their theater work as their profession, mm-hmm. but also bringing in really high quality artists from out of the area as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just going to jump in and say how incredibly similar that has been to my experience. You know, like we fight all of the time this idea that, you know, like a lot of the students who graduate here from the theater program at NAU have been told for decades that they have to get off the mountain. They have to go off the mountain. They have to go down to Phoenix or Tucson to do theater. And or really, completely even elsewhere. Though we, you know, started offering professional opportunities, it's a really uphill battle to fight just that kind of like, long standing idea that that's what you have to do. Like it's so ingrained. So to be like, hey, actually, you know, they could come here and, you know, yeah, we're not all year round, but if they come out of college and work with us, they're going to meet other people who do amazing theater all over the United States, mm-hmm. all over the world. They're still going to make those amazing connections and they're going to be able to mm-hmm. do some professional work here. So I totally feel you in that. I think that, you know, America has this like incredibly rich tradition of regional theater that then got a little bit muddied later on, where, you know, theaters started moving just to, as transportation became easier, as, you know, these big cities became like really accessible to more people, then the hubs of theater just relocated there rather than having like shows touring through or local acting troupes or, you know, there's just this really incredible tradition of regional theater that got lost for a little bit. And I think, was it, I'm so bad at like presidential history, was it Hoover for a while who like funded regional American theaters?
Mm-hmm. I think that was part of the Works Progress administration under Roosevelt.
Under Roosevelt. Yeah. Okay, it was Roosevelt who funded for a while some regional theaters. And that's just amazing to me to see things like that. But then, you know, that kind of faltered, I think, through mm-hmm. the 70s, 80s, 90s. And now I think we're seeing a resurgence of it because of what you're talking about. Like people now are really wanting to put down roots in their community. The cost of living is so high in some of the big cities. And this allows for actors to have maybe more enriching day jobs. I'm sure some actors love the day jobs that big cities afford, but a lot of times that is kind of like, you know, the trope of waiting tables or fixing coffees or whatever, whereas you can live in a smaller, you know, smaller place and have a different kind of day job work your theater job at night. So I just think, and also remote work, I think makes it a lot more possible for people to just work from their small town and do theater. But yeah, I'm really with you. I think it's so important because there are people who would not take the opportunity to travel to a big city to see a show, in the same way that if there is a professional show in their town, also that might come to their school or, you know, a friend might be going to and it's easy to tag along, like they're never going to experience theater if it's not where they are. And I remember early in starting Flag Shakes, there was some sort of statistic about like, we have Utah Shakespeare Festival. And I think I got a lot of like, people would be like, why do we need a Shakespeare Festival in Arizona if there's already one in Utah? But the numbers are kind of astounding. Like the amount of people who go to Utah Shakespeare Festival who are from Utah is something like 90%. And the amount of people who go to Utah Shakespeare Festival who are from Arizona is something like 4%. So to me, it was like, no, we clearly need it because people will come more readily to Flagstaff than they will, you know, go all the way up to Utah, this will be their opportunity.
That could be like a full weekend trip, and there are so many expenses, and etc. But also, Dawn, something I wanted to touch upon, talking about like bigger cities, is like a lot of times, like colleges, universities are like, go to the big cities, that's where the work is. And I guess this is a pre-pandemic mindset, but that's just where like some of the auditions are. Like, because typically if you're, if you live in a city, but then you're booking. So you're going to the smaller towns or the mountain towns or just mm-hmm. other areas that are not big cities to work. So,
well, well, the trope, like, even in the show the last 5 years, is summer in Ohio. Like, you live in New York just to go to some random small town, which personally I love. I love getting contracts in random small towns. Not everyone does, but yes, you're right. Like, it's kind of just the hub.
Yeah,
there's a lot of parallels that I'm hearing. You know, the location to, you know, you have Chicago and Detroit. We have Phoenix and Tucson. We are in that kind of upper half of the state where basically starting in the middle of the state, it's basically a professional drought kind of starting from the middle up. You know, there's lots of lovely artists in this area, but not a lot of paying work. And we're so rural up here that there's just not a lot. And we don't do as much touring as you guys do. So that's definitely like a bit of a difference there. But we have toured for sure and really enjoy touring when we do. But it's definitely not like the thing we do. And how many were similar in years, right? How many years have you guys been around?
We actually have been around, this is year 25 for us, because we started when I was in undergrad. Yeah,
so, that's awesome. But, you said it.
Yeah, so, but our like, our current incarnation, that, like, touring and performing year-round has been in existence since 2009. Okay. So that's a little more recent. Before that, we were only a summer company, and we were sort of fixed in one spot in the county parks. Mm-hmm. You know?
And well, congratulations in 25 years.
Oh my gosh. No small feat. I mean, I feel like you know, like, flexibility and pivoting is the absolute key to that. And you know, post pandemic, we're going through a lot of transitional stuff in the same way that many companies are.
Yeah, I know we pivoted and then pivoted back, and you know, it's been a really interesting it's been really interesting to go through that. I imagine a lot like Shakespeare's companies were constantly pivoting during plays. So they were like, new idea. So that makes sense to me. Like, you know, seeing some of the new thoughts and ideas that are coming from theater companies. Which I guess is kind of, maybe this is too much of a curveball question, but what do you think was your biggest pivot or takeaway from the pandemic as a regional theater?
Oh my gosh. I think my biggest takeaway was that the touring model really served us well in that situation, because we do not own our own venue. Mm-hmm. And you know, there previously had been some debate about that, you know, in our company development plans. Like, we have had some board members who've really advocated for it before. And I have always been hesitant about that because I feel like the additional operating expenses of maintaining a venue, both in terms of, you know, just the money, but also the time and, you know, needing person hours from someone who would then just be in charge of the venue seems not good for sustainability. And to me, the pandemic confirmed that, because operating expenses would have been the thing that would have, like, killed us, right? I mean, our budget is very heavy on production expenses because we tour, but if we're not producing, those expenses are not there. and when I saw, you know, some companies struggling with, like, we have, you know, this huge number of people on salary, and that's great. Like, of course, I would love to aspire to a huge number of people on salary, but being in that position and, like, having a venue to maintain seemed very difficult when you have this problem that comes in and causes you to cancel your productions. And it's not just the pandemic. I mean, there are things like Oregon Shakes had to last year cancel a huge number of shows because of the fires and the air quality, right? There are environmental things like that that are going to impact us in terms of, like, revenue not coming in from ticket sales. And so I feel like that affirmed to me that touring model, for us at least, is one that is a lot more sustainable.
And are you touring into, like, I think of the tour that Hannah and I did in New York, where it was a summer tour going into, like, schools, libraries, stuff like that. Is that where the venues that you're going into as well?
Some, but we also just go into communities as well. You know, we like, and it's there's a lot of different ways that that happens. You know, so, some of it is that I scout out venues, but some of it is that people find us and invite us to come. We have this wonderful thing in Michigan that's sponsored by the Michigan Humanities Council. They have a touring directory, and you apply to be a part of it. So it's basically like going through a grant application. You know, you have to submit all of these materials, and you have to like be peer reviewed and all of this kind of thing. But once you've been vetted, you are part of their touring directory. You're listed on their website, and then any venue that wants to bring you in is eligible for grant funds to pay your fee. And so there are a number of our more recent venues that have found us that way, which is fantastic. Just a really lovely program. It's, you know, like I say, it's a mix of schools and libraries, but also just like theater venues. And the ones that I scout, I will say, tend to be unconventional venues. Like I'm not really looking for big proscenium houses, because that doesn't suit our performance style very well. Like, I'm looking for, what's a place that we can turn into a theater that puts the audience right up close to us, kind of like the places that Clyde Shakespeare uses as well.
I know, whenever I'm on vacation or something and I see like a cute little amphitheater, I'm like, can we move here? Like, can we come here? Yeah. I know that this is in like, you know, three states away, yeah, but can Black Shakes come here? Like, yeah, this cute little outdoor theater.
Yeah.
This random spot.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you do a lot of outdoor theater as well, or what's the weather like in Michigan?
Yeah, so in the summer we do quite a bit. You know, we've got parks shows going on. We also have two like super exciting outdoor venues that we use in the summer that is just absolute serendipity that they popped up in our neck of the woods. So there is a fine arts camp right near where I live on the shores of Lake Michigan called the Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp. And I teach at Blue Lake. I teach a Shakespeare major to middle schoolers. But about 12 years ago, the camp received a donation to build a replica Shakespeare theater. So there is a little rose at the camp that primarily is used, you know, for the campers in the summer. But Pigeon Creek is the only professional company that gets to do public performances there. So we're there a couple of times each summer before camp starts and after camp ends, and that's, you know, partially outdoors. It's open air, you know, up at the top, just it's like a little miniature globe. So that's some of the outdoor stuff that we do. And then this year, for the first time, we are actually going to go to Detroit. It's the first time we'll have toured to Detroit. There's this developer, his name is Angus Vale, who has created this concept of the Container Globe. Yes, have you all talked about before? Yeah. So the Container Globe is a sort of modern industrial globe built out of shipping containers.
Yes.
And Angus has been working on that for a while. And it now, this summer, for the first time, is really ready for public performance. And so in September, the first week of September, we're going to be taking our late summer touring show there to perform in the Container Globe, which is also outdoor, open air. And I'm hoping that that's going to be a regular venue for us as well.
First ones to use it?
There have been some student groups that have performed, but ours will be the first full-length Shakespeare
in
the space.
Amazing! Congrats!
Thank you.
I've heard really cool things about it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I've been to visit the site, and it already looks really cool.
That's
so
awesome!
Yeah, I'm very excited.
What a fun
it.
Idea.
Dang.
That's so awesome. I really would love to go see that show, because I really want to see the Container Globe. But I would love to ask, what are some both pros and pitfalls of regional Shakespeare? Obviously, we all work for companies that kind of operate in this small model, and we live in sort of semi-rural areas. So what's really good about it, and what is really hard about it? And I'm sure we have very similar answers.
Yeah, I feel like you all are inviting me to get up on some of my favorite
soapboxes.
I feel like, for me, one of the absolute pros is just the personal interaction with audience members and the, like, being able to see the immediate impact that our shows have on the communities that we go into. So, you know, I can remember going into a town called Gaylord, Michigan, which is quite small in the north of the Lower Peninsula. And we arrived, and the people who were our contacts at the venue brought us the newspaper headline, and it had this huge, like, picture, you know, publicity photo that I had sent to them on the front page, and a headline that said Shakespeare comes to Gaylord. And I was just like thrilled with that. And, you know, getting to talk to audience members after shows and see their reaction. I have had people send thank you cards to my personal address. Like, I had someone send me a thank you card saying that she brought her 8-year-old mother to see Macbeth, and it was the first time her mother had ever seen Shakespeare. And we had done this kind of like post-apocalyptic punk Macbeth, and I was like, oh, what is this gonna say? And then it was like, she loved it. She thought it was the greatest thing. Just sort of some of those immediate impact things I think are fantastic. One of the big sort of struggles that I find, it's kind of a two-pronged thing. Press coverage is a really big problem for us, because there was a time maybe like 10 or 12 years ago that all of the small regional outlets kind of got rid of their dedicated arts reporters, right? And small regional newspapers being bought up by larger conglomerates, right? And like more and more of their content is coming from just sort of like centrally generated stuff that goes out, and it's like, here's what we're going to print. And so there's this big struggle for any kind of coverage. And the other thing that sort of goes along with that is, like, we sometimes run into a perception from members of the press that is, stuff that comes from our own region can't possibly be as good as what's going on in Chicago or Detroit. Or, like, you know, real quality theater is that touring Broadway show that comes in. And, you know, you have to push really hard to get people to treat, like, locally produced things as newsworthy. So that's one big thing that I feel like is a point of friction when you're doing a small regional theater.
We have something similar. We are one of the few companies here in town that produce, like, not constantly, but quite often. So, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff that happens in Flagstaff, but the stuff that gets the most press is the stuff that has never happened before. And we do shows, you know, 4 times a year. So we do one, and then we immediately get ready for the next one. And I just feel like the newspaper sometimes is like, but we just wrote an article about you a month ago. And I'm like, yeah, but we're doing another show. And they just kind of like stop listening. You know, they don't respond anymore. They're just not necessarily as interested in covering, because they're like, but you've already done 4 shows this year. Like, what makes this one different? So it's just kind of like, you kind of become noise, unfortunately. They just kind of like, yeah, it's not like they don't realize that it's a new show. It's a show that's never been done before. We're doing a new thing with it. Like, they just kind of start to tune out, unfortunately. So I get you there. We don't really get touring shows, though, so that's not a big problem for us. We don't get Broadway tours.
We get touring music more than anything, but not really theater, which, you know, I think would be a lovely thing if we did get touring theater. I'm firmly in the camp, I'm sure you are too, Catherine, of, you know, rising tide. Yeah. Like, you know, that would be good for us. The more theater there is available, the more theater people will see, and the more they'll be led to us. But I really hear you on some of those pitfalls, you know, especially the could this really be that good if it's coming from our small town? And what I think is lovely and reassures me is, you know, when someone who has seen Shakespeare in Oregon, in Utah, comes to Flagstaff. And last year, even I had a couple of people who were like, well, we're just traveling to Utah. I mean, that's not a good thing. But they were like, we love this. We're just going to come see theater here now. And it was like, oh, that's so wonderful to hear. Of course, I want them to go see all the theater everywhere. But to hear that, you know, in their minds, the comparison is like, this is just as good. This is just as interesting. And I think that also comes from you know, doing things differently as a regional theater and focusing on the original staging practices so that people are seeing Shakespeare differently than they're seeing in Utah or in Oregon, or definitely different than they're seeing on the screen. So I think that that's really helpful. I think one of my for regional theater biggest like pros is also the biggest cons, which is the acting pool. So like to me, one of the biggest pros is that once we have actors who are settled here, who we, you know, hire and they're amazing, then we have this talent that we can use over and over and over again. Use is the wrong word. We can call on over and over again and highlight over and over again in different roles. And I feel like audiences become very attached. They love seeing that person. They love seeing that person do something completely different than what they saw them do last time they saw them. So there's this real kind of like excitement around the talent and this ability to have loyalty to our talent and keep offering them. You know, like we just started a core company, which I think is really wonderful and important. And I love that. It then becomes problematic because outside of like the, you know, that group of really talented people that we have here, filling out our casts can be really hard because we are the only professional paying theater in our town. We have to attract the talent, and we're only 10 years old, so we don't have the budget to pay people what they're worth or what they need if they're relocating to work for you. So then that becomes a real pitfall for us. So I feel like it's, you know, the same, like two sides of the same coin. We've got this amazing local talent, and then filling it out beyond that can be really, really difficult. And hopefully, eventually, the solution will be that we are making so much money that we can pay people locally and non-locally great for their content. But in the interim, it's a real problem for us.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I should like let Becky jump in to see if that's something to say.
Well, I was just going to say, as a local actor, you feel like a local celebrity when people recognize you. A couple years ago, when I was seeing someone new and my mom was in town, and the three of us went out to eat, like we were waiting on the table, and somebody came up and was like, "Oh, were you in the show?" And I was like, "Yeah." Like, I don't know, they were just kind of like giving me compliments, and I was like, "This is absolutely lovely. Like, my mom and my new boyfriend, like, please, like, keep singing my praises. Thank you so much."
Make me look super cool. Yeah.
Thank you. What were you gonna say?
Well, I was just gonna say, I feel like, we're really lucky where we are that we have kind of a large pool of really high quality actors in the West Michigan area. Like, for whatever reason, Grand Rapids has attracted those people. And, you know, a lot of them are people who have graduated from our local colleges. And we have several of them that have really high quality theater programs. And I think more and more people are tending to stay in Michigan after they graduate because of the cost of living. And, you know, there's a pool of fantastic actors where we are. I feel like we have lucked out that way. So, you know, like I always say, and it sounds like you have a core of actors that you feel this way about too. Like, I would happily send the actors in Pigeon Creek's, what we call it, the repertory company, but it's very similar to your core company. I would happily send them anywhere in the country to audition for Shakespeare, and I know that they would be taken seriously, right? Like, I can't guarantee that they would be cast because there's so much that goes into that, but I guarantee they could go to those larger Shakespeare festivals and absolutely be taken seriously. And, you know, it's like, it's so amazing to me to work in a community that has that pool of people. And to the point where, you know, we get interest from folks from other parts of the country in coming to work with us, because if you want to work on Shakespeare in that particular original practices way, I feel like we've gained enough of a reputation as a good place to work that people have that interest. We actually have focused more, when we bring in guest artists, on bringing in directors from other parts of the country, because there's not a huge pool of Shakespeare specialists in terms of directing where we are. And so I feel like, you know, we've focused on, hey, let's help the development of our core company of actors by bringing in folks who speak that same language as them, but then also can infuse us with like new ideas.
So Black Shakes, that feels similar to Black Shakes, at least in my experience, like, especially like you coming into town and directing the show. So yeah, that feels pretty similar.
Jim Warren or you, or yeah, there's people that are big connections in the Shakespeare world. Yeah, totally. Let's talk about some more pros. So yeah, we kind of talked about like having really awesome locals. We talked about how, you know, people are very excited to have us. They're, especially in rural communities, they're like, I've never seen Shakespeare before. Maybe I've never even seen a play before, which I'm not sure how much of that is really necessarily happening in Flagstaff. I haven't gotten a lot of like, this was my first play ever. A lot, definitely a lot of like, this is my first Shakespeare ever. But for right, or like I've never seen a professional show.
Something I think that is a pro is because we're smaller, we can do the original staging practices where that might not work or might not work quite as well if it were like a larger proscenium stage or a 1,000-person audience, stuff like that.
And I think that's what I was going to say. My pro is kind of similar to what Catherine says. Is like you can see how things are affecting people like on their faces. Like times that I've done shows where I'm far away, like, you know, it's fun, but I specifically love Under the Tent, Under the Stars, Summer Night, literally looking someone in the eyes, making them laugh, making them cry, maybe bugging them, messing with their scarf, like stealing their program, you know, like doing something stupid and silly that makes them laugh right in front of their faces. And I can like physically change what I'm doing each night to be specific to the people that are in front of me, which is what I love the most. And very specifically here in Flagstaff, I just love being in the Ponderosa Pines, smelling the mountain air under our tent with the sparkly lights. Like there's literally nothing better than that. Like it's just, I don't know, it just feels magical. And we've kind of discussed like the magic of outdoor Shakespeare on a different episode before, so I won't go too far into it, but I really think that that's what regional Shakespeare has what it's got going for it. And I feel like the small communities that I've gone into, what I've really loved is like seeing the quirks of that little community. So like when I went to Sweet Tea Shakespeare or when I went to Island Shakespeare, like while I was there, getting to know that little community for those few weeks I was there or that month I was there, and going to the beach and seeing that and going to their little downtown and, you know, doing, you know, like just, yeah, like getting to know that little community and meeting those people. And it's so funny how similar we all are. Like when I go into those little Shakespeare companies, it's so funny because I'm like, oh my gosh, that person is the Dawn of our company. And wow, they're like kind of similar. That's funny. Or like, oh my gosh, that's the me of this company. And like, we go through all the same things and we have the same struggles, but also the same joys. And like, I see a lot of similarities between us. And I feel like that's what I love about regional Shakespeare is like, we're all kind of operating in our little microcosms, but at the same time, we're all the same. Like we're all connected, which I think is really cool. So I think that's for me, like the pros of regional Shakespeare is like these little magical bubbles that are all over the country that just kind of sprout everywhere, which is super cool. I think that's for you.
I feel like you also just hit on some of my absolute favorite aspects of touring, which is like we get to go into communities that I wouldn't see otherwise. And we, you know, like we get to go into these lovely small towns, and on our breaks we like go out and, you know, take hikes or go to the beach or like, you know, go, yeah, exactly, like go, you know, and after the show we go out to whatever the local bar is and like interact with audience members. Those are like just like such great experiences to have as an actor. And to to see like the actual different physical venues too, like what is the theater space or the place in this community that can be converted into a theater. It's just a delight to me to like to see the arts like become sort of integrated in these smaller communities as just part of their daily life. Like, oh, this is a thing that's going to happen this week. This is great.
My most favorite, most magical summers is the summer that Becky and I did a tour in upstate New York. And we had like basically this like little tradition that we started that if we passed an ice cream shop, we had to stop. And so we ate so much ice cream on that tour. But mind you, we were burning a lot of calories. It was hot. We were acting.
We were loading in our sets.
Like the amount of calories we burned warranted stopping at every ice cream shop. But like one of my most, like some of my most favorite memories are from that summer eating an exorbitant amount of ice cream at the smallest, dinkiest little shops in the middle of nowhere. Like seeing so many interesting downtowns, like little main streets with murals and all of the little libraries that we saw. Like we got to go into these little teeny tiny community libraries that were so important to these little communities. Yeah, all these little interesting diners. And
very similar to Catherine, what you were saying, in that like I would probably never go to this place if not for this show. And now I get to see, like, oh, yeah, this town is on a lake, and it's beautiful, but it's so tiny, I probably wouldn't have thought to go there otherwise.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've done very limited touring, but we've toured to some really awesome nearby tiny communities. We've gone to Jerome, which was amazing, and performed in their old school building, which was such a cool experience with Fool for Love. We go often to Winslow, which is a small town near here that does not get a lot of artistic traffic, but it has a gorgeous historic hotel and also a really kind of incredible art gallery because Alan Alfelt and Tina Neon are there who, you know, have kind of tried to re-enliven that scene. And they allow us to come perform at La Posada for free. Usually we don't pay for that venue, which is amazing. And then also my favorite of all time, Las Vegas, New Mexico, which is just a little town on the railroad line, again with two hotels owned by Alan Alfelt, who has invited us to come out there and perform. We've performed at their university, which has just like an incredible historic opera house. And so we've gotten to perform in there a few times. I find that, like, this is also lovely. I wonder if you have anything to say to this, Catherine, because one of the problems that we have is when we go to these small towns, we have a really hard time with advertisement. It's really hard to get the word out about what we're doing. Especially if they don't have a local newspaper. Sometimes we can get something on, like, a local Facebook group. But also there's not just the same like word of mouth of like, oh yeah, I saw them and they're amazing because they've never had us there before, or, you know. So we actually find it really hard when we tour to get that kind of audience into a touring venue. So that's something that we kind of struggle with in those smaller towns. Though someplace like Winslow will actually get a lot of people from Flagstaff who come and watch. Someplace like Jerome will get people from Sedona and Cottonwood who come and watch, but it's a little bit harder just to reach new audiences in far-flung places and to get the marketing out there. But when we go, it's always a really fun time for us. And, you know, similar to what you were saying, like after one of our shows in Las Vegas, there was this little girl who came to see, we performed two performances of Winter's Tale. And her big brother brought her to see both of them because she wanted to be an actress, but she'd never seen a play. And so she wanted to come see it both times because she wanted to, you know, just really get to experience what it was to see theater. And it's like, well, maybe we only had 50 people in the audience, but the fact that that was one of them made it all worth it. was this little girl. So, yeah, those are some of the places I loved, but we struggle to advertise when we get there.
So I'm going to get into like finer points of administrating touring theater. Hopefully that's still interesting to people who are listening. So
we talk about it all.
Yeah, because we tour so often, we have a few different models that we use in terms of relationship with our venues. And the further away from home we go, the more we want our venues to be like actual partners rather than just we're renting this space and we're going to come to you. And I feel like the most successful we've been, like going further afield and especially into tiny, tiny communities, is if we have a venue that feels like they have a vested interest in getting that audience in there. So that they really are doing a lot of that work on the ground because we're not on site to do it. So I feel like I over time have sort of like refined what is the contract that we're going to make with a touring venue. And sometimes we'll even do like a box office split situation with them because that means they have a much more vested interest, right? Like the way that they are making their money is also from making sure that there is an audience there. So I feel like that idea of partnership rather than just like, this is a transaction, it's a rental, like, you know, this is what we show up and do a show. And, you know, it's very interesting to me. Sometimes there are people who run venues who I think have a different attitude towards that than I do, who just go, oh, well, you know, if we do the basics of putting it on our website and it doesn't sell, then that means that Shakespeare won't sell in our community. And I sometimes have to go have a meeting with people and convince them like, hey, the way to make Shakespeare sell in your community is to put, you know, some effort into it. And I need help from your marketing people because I don't know your community, right? Like, I don't have the press contact. I don't know, you know, if like actual hard copy posters in store windows are effective in your community. Some places they are, some places they're not. I don't know how much your audience uses social media. It kind of depends on what age demographic they're coming from. Like, you know, I definitely feel like the idea of venues as partners has become really important to me in terms of touring. Like, it can't just be a straight up transactional relationship.
Yeah, we can do our best, but like, you know, here at Flag Shakes, a lot of my marketing has been years and years of building, of getting to know people, of knowing who to contact, knowing who it is not worth contacting because they won't respond or whatever. Or like, yeah, which windows do actually get people. And so it's like when you tour, you're starting completely over for one show. And that can be really hard because it costs a lot of money, a lot of hours, and you still don't know if it's going to work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that can be super tough. So we are kind of getting low on time. But what else do we want to wrap up with, or final thoughts about regional Shakespeare, what it's been like to create, be a part of, pros, cons?
I feel like I would love to hear from you all about sort of future development and sustainability and what you're thinking about in that direction.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear your thoughts too. I think that, you know, this is something we can, as theater companies, all be talking about. To kind of go back to what you were saying earlier, we also had a dream of a space, of a purpose-built space for our theater. And we got a big grant for a feasibility study on a space. You know, we kind of got word that we were going to receive the grant in December of 2019. So then in March of 2020, those funds were all redirected into emergency funds, obviously. And then through the pandemic, one of the reasons we made it is because we didn't have a space. Mm-hmm. Just like you were saying, we didn't have the overhead. We didn't have to think about how to, you know, keep something up and running. But I do think, you know, long term for us, it is something that's vital. Mm-hmm. What I'd want to make sure is that it's a space that is really, really works for original staging practices, but is versatile enough that we can share it, mm-hmm. probably with other non-theater organizations. So, you know, we've talked about an open-air globe type building up at Lowell, which would be lovely, obviously, also for summer stargazing or weddings or, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm really hoping that that's like eventually where we're headed. I think for us it is important because one huge difference between Flagstaff and a lot of other small towns is that we are a real estate island, and real estate is at a premium here. So venue rentals are really hard and really expensive. Housing for actors is really hard and really expensive. Thank you, any hosts who are listening, star actors. So having our own space that includes a little bit of housing, that includes a purpose-built theater that we can share with other arts, science, ideas, organizations is, I think, it has to be in our vision. Maybe not in the next 10 years. Maybe it's 20 years out. I'm not sure. It's whenever the person with the money comes along, I think, is when that happens. Mm-hmm. But that's really, you know, for us, I think that will be a big step in the right direction as far as sustainability and just having our own space is going to be huge because it's a premium price tag around here. But I do agree with you in that it was a blessing in disguise through the pandemic not to have space. we were that perfect size where we were big enough to apply for a lot of the emergency funding and small enough to not have to let people go or shutter anything because we didn't own anything to shutter. So that was nice for us. But I think that's our future as far as like the sustainability of Flag Shakes is having a home that is, you know, a permanent home for us, but something that is a good space to share so that we're not the only people occupying it. Kind of like the art camp you were talking about, you're sharing space with. That'd be sort of an ideal scenario for us, is something like that.
Yeah, and that includes, you know, offices for us and rehearsal rooms for the actors. And also, because currently, you know, we operate completely separately. We have a storage unit. We all work from home, which I think most of us like working from home. But then we have to rent out a rehearsal space and a venue space and housing. And so we're having to do like here, 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 and here. And if we had a space, we could have a box office. And then it could all actually live in there. Like we could have a lobby. All of our tabling stuff could stay there. Like currently everything lives in our homes or in our cars or in our storage unit, or it's all, you know, we just have to sort of survive and we have to reset up everything every year. We have to rebuild the stage. We have to pull out all the costumes. We have to do, you know, everything kind of starts over every year. And that's a lot of manpower. And so that would cut down on that manpower, which would hopefully mean that manpower could be used elsewhere, which would mean we could, yeah, do something else a little bit more efficiently or make something or pay our actors more or whatever happens to be. Because currently we spend a lot of money and manpower just getting started for every single show, which is just tough. But how about you guys?
Yeah. So I think, you know, as far as Pigeon Creek specifically goes, my project sort of over the next 5 years, and it may extend further than that because, you know, we're still recovering from pandemic as everyone is, but like I'm very pleased with the level that our programming is at right now, and I really want to create a situation that's the ideally resourced version of that programming. So like even though we are not pursuing our own performance space, leased rehearsal space that can be permanent and have our office in the same place would definitely be a thing that we are looking for as well. I think that would be, you know, it would just take so much stress off, as you're saying, like would allow our administrators' hours to go towards other things. And of course, like pursuing larger grants, which is always like, there's this weird transitional moment that I feel like we are in where I've heard from many people who run larger companies that it's, that is the really hard transition to make is to get into the place where you, for example, are paying your actors their like a weekly SPT minimum kind of thing, because you need large grants to do that, but those larger grants aren't necessarily available to the smaller budget companies because they have so much matching attached to them. So that transitional moment is something we're trying to navigate right now.
You also have to make more to get more.
Exactly.
Budget size is, like, I feel like people don't understand how grants work, that being a certain budget level means you can only get so much.
Correct.
Which is really weird, because if you make little, you can only get little. And if you make a ton, or not make a ton, if your budget is a ton, you can get a lot more.
Yeah,
so exactly. Getting, like, we've talked about this a lot, you know, at Flag Shakes, is like bumping just barely into the next budget bracket actually gets us a lot more. So it behooves us to try to inch our way up just so that we can make more. But that's weird because you're like, but we need money.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly the sort of transitional moment that we're thinking about, too. And, you know, I'm really thinking about trying to, without raising ticket prices too much, maximize our earned income, right? Our ticket sales and our performance fees. So we have a lot of focus on like really selling out the shows that we have going on, and on contracting more of the kinds of performances where we're making a flat fee, like going into schools and that kind of thing. So that, you know, like focusing on how can we increase the earned income so that we get into that next budget level is a big thing for us right now. And the thing that I'm thinking about, like more holistically, has to do with sort of observing the ecosystem of small regional theater and thinking about our strategic positioning and making sure that I'm observing like real professional courtesy and consideration for other companies that exist in the same kind of realm that we do, especially because we tour. Like if I go into a new community, I don't want to be stepping on the toes of other theaters that exist in that community. So like making sure we're differentiating like in terms of vision and aesthetic so that we're encouraging people to see us because it's something different and not saying, oh, see us instead of this other thing, but see us along with this other thing. Sort of like Dawn was talking about, you know, that rising tide. We want to make sure we're contributing to the rising tide. And not just like popping up and doing things because we want to do them, you know, like, but making sure that we are nourishing and providing something new in each of the communities that we go into, and thinking about what are the ways that we can partner with other organizations, like really getting buy-in from non-theater organizations, like you all were talking about working with libraries and that kind of thing. Like, what are the ways that we can integrate ourselves into these communities? Because I think like the arts becoming part of people's everyday lives in small communities is what will make them sustainable long term.
I really liked what you said about like being sure that we're being cognizant of other companies. I think we've been seeing a nice trend just in the last, you know, 5-10 years. I've talked about this a lot, like as a person, like just as an actor human, that like the trend is less competition these days, and I really appreciate that. Like, I've talked about this a lot, but like in college, it was very much like those girls, those are your competition. That's your competition. It's like, well, I no, like, you know, we all work with each other, and like especially in the small regional theater community, it is crazy how much you will work with the same people over and over again. And this person gets you that job, and then you meet this person, and it's like why, like, if people like theater, they want to see theater. Like, it's so true. We need to start being cognizant of all, not just theater, but yeah, like aerial and music and art. Like, we need to start collaborating. And I think that's something that we love to do at Flag Shakes, is trying to find those opportunities to like make weird, cool, awesome combos. Like, oh, you do a weird thing, we also do Shakespeare, which is kind of weird, let's do this thing together. And those are sometimes like our most popular events because they're unusual and they bring in, you know, a combo. So I think, I mean, maybe even because you tour so much, I wonder if there's like some cool opportunity for you to actually like partner with those local theaters and like maybe do something with them and maybe some sort of a combo production or buy a ticket here and then get a ticket here. I don't know. It's just like some ways to like get involved with those local communities, I think is a really awesome idea. So cool. All right. Any final notes?
You want them to find you?
Yes. So if you are interested in coming to see some Shakespeare in Michigan, go to pcshakespeare.com for all of our updated information. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under PC Shakes.
Nice. And how about you, Catherine? If someone wants to hire you, if you're like, ooh, I want to, because you freelance direct all over.
I do.
Do you have your own website and such as well?
Yeah, it's not super updated right now, so I feel like I should just point people to the Pigeon Creek one. Usually my time is dedicated to updating that one, but absolutely, you can contact me through the Pigeon Creek website.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Amazing. Alrighty.
Well. And just to plug Catherine really quickly. Mm-hmm. She directed Comedy of Errors for us 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And it was a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. So bring her to your theater company. And not just that, I think, you know, this kind of ties into Eileen, who we talked to last time, who is also a big fan of Catherine. I think one of the happiest casts we've ever had.
We've talked about that a thousand times.
Wow. Yes. I feel like that's actually the bigger compliment to me.
No.
I feel like also the quality of a show often has to do with how comfortable the cast feels in rehearsal. So that's amazing to hear.
Yeah.
And you were wonderful at doing that. So hire Catherine.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's so nice. Well, yeah. And everyone come work with Flag Shakes, because it's partly the atmosphere that you all are creating and like the kind of company culture that I feel like allows people to do that great work.
No,
thank you.
We work very hard. Amazing. Well, it was so lovely to have you on today, Catherine.
So
it was really lovely. I feel like we've never specifically talked to another, like we've talked so much about regional tiny Shakespeare, but we've never kind of gotten another perspective of someone similar. So, yeah.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of Untamed Shrews. I'm Dawn.
And I'm Hannah.
And I'm Becky. Join us next episode in September. Oh my gosh, September.
So far away.
Follow Untamed Shrews on our Instagram at Untamed Shrews Podcast and on the Flag Shakes website. All episodes of Untamed Shrews can be found wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on sunsounds.org.
Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, put us in your Instagram stories, donate at flagshakes.org/donate, become a podcast sponsor, and buy Shrew Crew merch. Help support the Shrew Crew.
This episode of Untamed Shrew, starring Hannah Fonce, Dawn Tucker, Becky Zaritsky, and Catherine Mayberry. Show art by Calliope Ludecker. Podcast theme song by Cadence Lamb. Podcast produced and edited by Hannah Fonce. Wait, my name is no longer Hannah Fonce. Never mind, I take it all back. My name is Hannah Johnson, everybody.
This is the debut of Hannah Johnson.
Presented by Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival and recorded with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Special thanks to our audio engineer, Gina Byers.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.